Sam, I want to talk about the maximum wage, and just for a refresher course for those of us who don't know a lot about it, the maximum wage push, or it was first proposed in America in 1942 by FDR. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, he was the first president to actually talk about it. But actually, the idea of capping income at the top of the economic scale goes back to the late 1800s in the United States, and then during the 19-teens, there were a number of public figures who supported the idea of a maximum wage, including E.W. Scripps, the founder of the Scripps-Howard newspaper chain. So it has a bit of a history in the United States.
In looking over a summary of your work by Howard Saunders, I see reference to the long-forgotten history of the many popular struggles to limit the incomes of the very wealthy. What are some of the other popular struggles?
The entire idea of a progressive income tax is part of that struggle. When we first had a progressive income tax in the United States in 1894, it was found unconstitutional by the Supreme Court the next year, and it took a constitutional amendment in 1913 to make the income tax part of the law. But at the beginning, the income tax only applied to incomes at the top. Average working people did not pay income tax. The progressive income tax was seen as a way of making our country more equal in terms of income and wealth. So that whole struggle to enact the progressive income tax has been part of the struggle to fight against inequality in the United States.
In Saunders' writing, he makes reference to a strategy for achieving a rich people free America. Why do we need a rich people free America?
Well, if you ask the average American right now, is the absence of wealth a problem? In other words, is poverty a problem? People say, yes, absolutely, poverty is a problem. Al Gore says poverty is a problem. George Bush says poverty is a problem. Everybody agrees on that. But if you ask people, is the concentration of wealth in the United States a problem? Well, there's not a consensus there in the United States. In fact, a lot of people believe, well, it doesn't matter how rich some people get as long as people at the bottom are taken care of. But the reality is that if we allow inequality to grow, if we allow wealth to concentrate at the top of the economic scale, we create all sorts of problems for our society. We don't have decency for people at the bottom, and we create all sorts of problems for people in the middle. And if you look over the past quarter century, which has been a time of growing inequality in the United States, what you see is that middle-income people, their incomes have stopped growing. If we want a more just United States, if we want a United States where more and more Americans can start realizing the American dream, we have to start focusing in on the problem of inequality. We have to start focusing in on the problem of the concentration of wealth. And I think that's beginning to sink into more and more people.
I'd imagine that part of the reason people are so hesitant to make a statement concerning wage caps and maximum wage and the extremely wealthy and so forth is because they're afraid of sounding socialist.
Right. I mean, I'm sure some people feel that way, but there's a rich American heritage that goes all the way back to the Revolutionary War period and Benjamin Franklin that holds that a nation with deep economic inequality cannot be a nation where you can have real democracy.
At the heart of the strategy that's outlined, I see a plan for new federal income tax rates that are calibrated to the minimum wage. How exactly does that play out?
Well, when Franklin Roosevelt proposed his maximum wage in 1942, he talked about a fixed number. And his fixed number was $25,000 for an individual, which would be about $230,000 in today's purchasing terms. I don't think that fixed number is actually the best approach. I think a better approach is tying the maximum wage to the minimum wage. In other words, calibrating the maximum as a percentage, as a ratio to the bottom, say 10 times. If you made more than 10 times the minimum wage or 25 times the minimum wage, than any income over that 10 or 25% would be subject to a 100% federal income tax, creating, in effect, a maximum wage at 10 or 25 times the minimum. If we did this, if we created a system where the incomes at the top depended on the incomes at the bottom, that is, the higher the incomes at the bottom, the higher the incomes at the top could be, then we'd have a situation where the very wealthiest and most powerful people in the country would have a vested interest in raising the incomes at the bottom of the income scale. And that would be a very healthy dynamic, it seems to me.
And probably would create a lot of new jobs for economists, too. How would you respond to the upper crust, if you will, the CEOs of these companies who have come out and said, as long as I can pay my workers $10, $11, $12 an hour and they can make a fairly decent living wage, I have a right to make as much as I'm able to?
Well, let's look at what's happening in the economy right now and in corporate America. Over the course of the 1990s, CEO salaries, the salaries of CEO, the total compensation of the CEOs of major American corporations over the course of the 1990s has increased by 535%. Meanwhile, average workers, their hourly pay in inflation-adjusted dollars is actually less now than it was back in 1973. So what we have is a huge transfer of wealth from average working people to top executives. Back in 1980, top executives made 42 times what their average workers made. Now the ratio is 475 times. So when I hear CEOs talking about, well, we're earning our compensation, are CEOs today more than 10 times smarter, working more than 10 times harder than CEOs were 20 years ago? I don't think so. I think what they've done better than they did 20 years ago is grab. And we have an economy now where the stronger you are, the more you can grab. And that's the law of the jungle. That shouldn't be the law that we follow as we try to create a compassionate society.
Definitely a less civilized method of wealth distribution than some of the pundits might have us believe.
Yes.
I'm wondering, what do you see as catalysts, sort of methods to the end result?
I think there are a number of steps we can take that. Congressman Szabo from Minnesota, Martin Szabo, has had a bill in Congress since the early 1990s. Very interesting bill. Right now, when corporations pay executives these huge salary packages, they can deduct those huge salary packages from executives from the corporate income tax they pay. So in other words, the more they pay the top executives, the less they pay in corporate income tax, and the more the federal tax burden falls on individual. What Congressman Szabo's Income Equity Act suggests is that no corporation should be allowed to deduct from its corporate income tax any compensation to executives that runs more than 25 times the pay of the lowest paid worker in the firm. That measure doesn't create a maximum wage, but it creates a incentive for corporations not to overpay their executives. And I think those sorts of steps are concrete moves that we can make to move to a more equitable, common-sense society.
That's one very concrete example of corporate welfare right there.
Yes.
We've seen a lot in the last few years of both grassroots organizing at the street level with things like the WTO protests.
Yes.
And many different levels, intellectual levels, the progressive media, certain organizations, nonprofits out in D.C., all working to shrink the wage gap up and the earnings gap and the savings gap and all of that. Do you see these as being effective?
Yes, and certainly movements like the living wage movement, which started in Baltimore in 1984, have really exploded and all across the country. And these are very important movements that are raising the issue of economic justice in society. Unfortunately, we still, as even within the progressive movement, many people still have not are still not sensitive to what I think the reality is, and that is that it's not just poverty that's the problem in the United States. It's inequality, and that until we focus in on inequality, we're not going to create the just society that we all need and deserve.
What are some of the contributors to inequality aside from just pay scale?
Well, there are a number of factors that go into that. We've talked about fewer and weaker unions. You can look to the failure of Congress to raise the minimum wage over the years. So we have a lower real value of the minimum wage. We have a shift in the American economy away from manufacturing jobs past 20 years, and which is related to the whole phenomenon of globalization. Where American workers are now forced to compete in many sectors with workers making incredibly low wages elsewhere in the world. All of these factors sort of combine to create the milieu where inequality grows, in much the same way that over 100 years ago in the Gilded Age, a similar complex of factors created growing inequality. And at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, people mobilized to fight that inequality, and that's what we need to do again today.
All right, Sam, what does the future hold as far as the continuing efforts to shrink the wage gap up, and where can our listeners go to get more information on this?
Well, there are a number of, I think, very hopeful signs. There's a national group based in Boston, which is almost 5 years old now, which has been doing a great job at grassroots education about the income and wealth gap. That group is United for a Fair Economy. It's got a wonderful website at www.ufe.org. And among other things, this organization publishes a quarterly newsletter on inequality and the struggle against inequality issues. And sample copies of that newsletter are available for free. And I can give you the 800 number for that if people are interested. That's 1-800-316-2739. And people can call that and ask for a free copy of a sample copy of Too Much, which is this newsletter on inequality issues.
All right, Sam, I want to thank you for the call.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.